It's Thursday, December 31st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. All this week, we've been taking a look back at the biggest trends that shaped 2020 and looking ahead to what the new year might bring. We've been joined by experts in a variety of fields talking about the future of retail, challenges for the economy, and how conversations about race and diversity are reshaping businesses and our work lives. Today, we end our week of special episodes with a look at the state of democracy worldwide. We'll be joined by Frank Fukuyama. He's a senior fellow at Stanford's Freeman Spogli Institute and Mossbacher director of its Center on Democracy, Development, and Rule of Law. We'll be discussing how democracy fared in the global tests posed by this year.
So you've had the consolidation of these big authoritarian powers like Russia and China that are able to use their power to spread distrust of democracy and to spread their own system to other parts of the world. And you've had the rise of populism in many well-established democracies, beginning with Britain and the United States.
That's coming up after the break. Yesterday's episode on race delved into some of the complicated, often messy ways that social issues are addressed, from uncomfortable conversations in the workplace to confrontations amid street protests. The ability to challenge racial injustice in these and other ways is central to any democracy. Today, we're taking a big step back to look at democracy on a global scale. Beyond testing the U.S. electoral system, 2020 put pressure on all national governments as they dealt with the coronavirus pandemic. There have been questions about what governments should be doing to protect citizens, and there have been protests from citizens in many countries about perceived government overreach. To talk about it, I'm joined now by Frank Fukuyama, a senior fellow at Stanford's Freeman Spogli Institute and Mossbacher director of its Center on Democracy, Development, and Rule of Law. Hi, Frank. Thanks for being here.
Thanks very much for having me.
Let's start here in the United States. This year, we had an election where both Democrats and Republicans said democracy itself was on the ballot. Of course, each had a very different idea about what that meant.
Well, yes, and I think that it really shows both the strength and the weakness of American democratic institutions. I think that the strength came in the fact that Americans actually did vote in overwhelming numbers. They selected Joe Biden as president. It was actually a relatively clean election, and so it shows, I think, that there is fundamental democratic accountability. The bad news, I think, is that there's a substantial portion of the country that believes that that's not a true narrative. And this is obviously something that was led by the president himself, who claims that there was massive fraud, that he actually won by a landslide. He has not provided any actual data to back this up, and the courts have overwhelmingly rejected this view. But I think that, you know, going forward, it's a very bad thing when that large proportion of the electorate thinks that our fundamental system of choosing leaders is corrupt and not working. And so in that respect, I think we've still got a big problem with the functioning of American democracy.
And it's impossible to talk about this year's election without talking about the pandemic, which played a huge role here. Can you talk about specifically how the pandemic played a role in America's democracy?
I think that if you go back to January, there was probably a pretty good chance that President Trump would have won a second term. The economy was going pretty well. There were a lot of jobs. There was economic growth and stability. But the pandemic, I think, exposed a real weakness because I believe that the administration's attempt to deny that it was even happening, you know, led to a cascading series of errors and a failure of the federal government to deal seriously with it. And as a result, we suffered much higher rates of infection and death than we needed to. And I do think that that very much undermined Trump's chances of getting reelected because there is a pretty clear cause and effect relationship between that kind of national leadership that was required and what actually happened.
Broadening that out to other democracies across the world, you've written about how the pandemic was used as a pretext in some democratic countries to consolidate or expand executive authority. Can you talk more about that?
Well, sure. When you face a national emergency like a pandemic, you know, there's a legitimate reason to actually expand executive authority because the country needs to act quickly and decisively to do things like impose quarantines or mask orders or different kinds of mandates. And I think that democratic countries have done that, but a lot of countries have used this as an excuse simply to expand executive power. So, for example, in Hungary, the parliament very early on voted to give Viktor Orban, the populist president there, extraordinary emergency powers. And of course, the first thing he does is to suspend LGBTQ rights, you know, not related to the pandemic. I think he simply wanted that authority. So this has happened in El Salvador, in India, in Tanzania, Uganda. I mean, there's any number of countries where the pandemic has been a kind of useful excuse for powerful populist or authoritarian leaders to do what they would have wanted to do anyway.
Let's talk about China and its response to the coronavirus. What has that told us about its government and its standing globally?
Well, obviously, China really screwed up the initial response. Its system doesn't promote transparency, and therefore, they suppressed news about the coronavirus when it first appeared in Wuhan and failed to act. Then they pivoted. And the pivoting is something that would be really possible only in a strongly authoritarian country like the one that they've got, where they were able to suppress the further outbreak. And so at this point, they have a reported fewer than 5,000 deaths overall. And that, I think, in the end, does not make democracy look good compared to authoritarian government, even though that's not really a valid generalization. I think that's unfair because I think many democratic countries like Japan or South Korea, Taiwan, Germany, New Zealand have actually done as well or even better than China in controlling the virus. But because the United States and China are seen as exemplars of different forms of government, democracy and authoritarian dictatorship, you know, respectively, it doesn't look good. It doesn't make democracy as a whole look good. And I think the other thing that's happened is that it has, well, actually a couple of bad things. It's given China cover to expand its authority. So it basically violated its 1997 commitment to the autonomy of Hong Kong by extending its security law there. They probably wanted to do this last year in the face of the pro-democracy demonstrations, but the epidemic gave them perfect cover to do that. And now that their economy has recovered, I think it's going to continue to add to their geopolitical weight in the world at the expense of both Europe and the United States.
You've written about something called democratic recession. Can you explain what that means and how it applies to looking at the state of democracy in 2020?
Well, sure. Between the early 1970s and I would say the mid-2000s, there was a huge increase in the number of democracies, which has been labeled the third wave of democratization, where the number of democracies around the world went from about maybe 35 or so in 1970 to like 110, 115 by the time you got to the first decade of the 21st century. But since about the time of the financial crisis in 2008, we've been in what has been labeled a democratic recession, and which some people are worried is going to turn into a full-fledged recession. So you've had the consolidation of these big authoritarian powers like Russia and China that are able to use their power to spread distrust of democracy and to spread their own system to other parts of the world. And you've had the rise of populism in many well-established democracies, beginning with Britain and the United States, which in 2016 voted for populist governments that, on the one hand, pulled Britain out of the European Union and in the United States brought Donald Trump to power, and in many other countries as well, in Turkey, in Hungary, in Poland, you've seen popularly elected leaders that use their democratic mandate to basically attack the rule of law. They don't like courts, they don't like independent media, they don't like a nonpartisan bureaucracy. And there's been, therefore, an erosion of all of those institutions around the world. The organization Freedom House that rates democracy around the world has noted this democratic recession. The scores, the aggregate scores for political and civil rights around the world has fallen for each of the last 15 years. And I suspect that when they announce their new results in January, 2020 is going to see one of the biggest drops of all of those years.
So overall, not an easy question, Frank, but where does all this leave us as we begin the new year, 2021?
Well, I think that we shouldn't give up hope. You know, we did have a successful election that did bring some degree of accountability in the United States. I think it fundamentally, and in fact, the way that the court system handled all of the charges, the baseless charges of electoral fraud, is actually a testament to the fact that we still do have an independent judiciary, and that's something to be hopeful about. There's other Democratic leaders that performed well, like Angela Merkel in Germany or Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand. They've both seen increases in their popularity as a result of the pandemic. So it could be that, you know, there's going to be grounds for some pushback against all of these anti-democratic forces that we've seen appearing around the world. Or at least let's hope that that's what's going to happen in 2021.
My guest has been Frank Fukuyama. He's a senior fellow at Stanford's Freeman Spogli Institute and Mossbacher Director of its Center on Democracy, Development, and Rule of Law. Frank, thanks so much for being here.
Okay, thank you very much.
We've got more 2020 reflections with other leading voices in their fields on our website. You can find our Year in Review special report at wsj.com/year-in-review. What's News will be off tomorrow for New Year's Day, but we'll be back again on Monday morning. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.